Postmaster and my distinguished colleagues of the Congress and members of the Fort Wayne Gridiron Club. The one really good thing about the presidency as I see it is that the general rule is that when you're introduced, all they can say is Mr. President. That may be the real reason for my running. Until tonight, I thought I'd been making progress. The introductions have been getting shorter. One or two other signs, they're giving me more police protection than I want. And they're starting to take me up the food elevator. I can't get on a decent elevator at any hotel in Indiana. At least I think they're the food elevators. It just came from Gary. Senator Baker, I sometimes during this campaign wish I were a Republican. You said some things tonight I've been wanting to say about my opponents, my own party. I wish I could take you with me for the rest of this campaign. I'm most helpful. Pierre, I'm glad to see you here. I was a little surprised. I thought the same rule would apply to you that applied to your principal, that he wouldn't appear unless all candidates were represented. The vice president entered the contest. This came as no surprise to me. I'd made a projection. Since we've had Bob McNamara, we all make projections now. And I saw this coming as long ago as 1952. That's a year most of you don't remember, but my first speech at a national convention, I nominated Hubert Humphrey for President of the United States in 1952. Then in 1956, he ran for Vice President. Then in 1960, he ran for President. And in 1964, I nominated him for vice president. That carried. So 1968 was his year to run for president again. I mean, if you have a little foresight in politics, why, there are no surprises, I'll tell you that. Well, my campaign came as something of a surprise to many people. As you know, I really didn't receive a call from the White House saying, we think you ought to run. And John Bailey, our great leader, about a year ago said that the convention was over. He said Lyndon Johnson had been renominated and the Democratic platform was already written. At the right time, they were just going to send up some white smoke. We'd all know it was over at that point. And I think I have to admit that even my colleagues in the Senate didn't rise up and cheer the announcement of my candidacy. Many of them came up to me at that time and said, what about your future? These were fellows who had never before been concerned about it. One of the most touching things I've ever experienced in my campaign. And the early polls didn't encourage me very much, and I couldn't say I was responding to the popular demand of the press. In any case, I'm not going to, you've heard me, I think, perhaps too often explain the reasons that I give for my entering upon this campaign. The early stages were really rather trying. I became somewhat sympathetic to the conservative press. I never thought I would, but the liberal columnists began to explain me in terms of psychological disturbances. I never know whether that, they do that to be kind or whether they think that's the worst thing they can say about you. But, and then the conservatives came on, and they said I had rather traditional vices like envy, and I felt pretty good about that, and anger and jealousy, and one even said I was acting out of enmity. I didn't know that one counted anymore. I thought that that had gone out. You really, it's not around very much anymore. But I really preferred the latter analyses and was quite content, and I settled down. And then they said I had no charisma. And that's a pretty bad thing not to have. I mean, you're supposed to have that. And just all alone it would have been bad, but they were comparing me to people like George Romney at that time. And let's see. It's these relative judgments that really get to you. It's out of it. Oh, it's right. George Romney was, you know, up in New Hampshire falling off the skis, and he even tipped over a snowmobile. I didn't know you could do that. And then they began to talk about my clothes, about, I don't know, my suits didn't fit right, and my neckties, and this was at a time when I was challenging Lyndon Johnson, and I mean, you know, as a fellow who could have... All of these things helped me, I think, as I came around later. I felt, as I think Carl Hayden did when he ran for the Senate 6 years ago, his opponent said he was dead. And they had a television picture of him in the hospital in which he raised his right hand from the sheets. He was reelected, so they said so many bad things about me in the beginning that I don't have to prove very much now. Prove that I've been pretty badly misrepresented. It always helps. First time I ran for the Senate, my opponent said I was totally ignorant of agriculture. And he wasn't right. I was able to identify a Hereford steer the next day at a farm auction. Farmer said, proved that from that point on, he never headed me. I did go into the primaries. If you're concerned that you were about being overrun with presidential candidates, you should be appreciative of what I did in New Hampshire. Because in New Hampshire, when I entered, there were 10 people running. When I finished, I don't know what the reason is, we'd cut it down to 4. We'd eliminated, at least temporarily, Rockefeller and a man named Herbert Hoover. But soon after that, we cut it down to 4. It went up to 5, as you know, in the middle of the Wisconsin primary. Then in the Wisconsin primary, we eliminated 2. President Johnson and I think Harold Stassen. I was right. Then in the middle of the Indiana primary, we have another late starter. And I wish that they would wait until the end of the primaries in which I'm engaged, because I now know that every time I go around the track, they put another runner in against me. I have to go around again all alone. And I think I probably really missed the dropout more than those who've dropped in. I had begun to build a pretty good case against the president. I'd said things like, you know, the barbecues on the ranch really don't start out to be barbecues, they're just branding parties that get out of hand. We were prepared. We'd made a special exploratory trip up the Pedernales River and found that it really rose in the Big Rock Candy Mountain. Nobody knew that. We were saving that for a later primary. I do. what they call the great society in the Big Rock Candy Mountain. And I'd made a deep analysis of what was wrong with the Johnson handling of the country, which was that his whole experience was in pretty much in driving cattle. And you fellows know here that the way you drive cattle is you start them slow, and then you kind of increase the pace, and when you get them near the shipping pen, you want to have kind of a stampede going so they don't have any time to think about it very much. But when he talked about cutting and running, about my early effort, I understood just what he meant, but I also realized that's the only way to get out of a stampede. But more important than that was that you have to have a balanced approach to politics. It helps to know how to drive pigs. Now, here in Indiana, you know something about that, and it's just the opposite of how you drive cattle. You start a bunch of hogs, you start them as fast as you can. You make all kinds of noise, you panic them, you know. You shout at them in Latin. They're the only animal that talks Latin, that's all. And then you move them along, but you have to go a little bit slower every step. So you get them right to the pen you want them to go into, you come to a stop, and they look right and left and think they discovered it. And in they go. Now, there's some issues that have to be handled that way and some the other way, and there's some issues which you have to handle according to people psychology. Well, that was, I say, a disappointment to me, because I had my whole case mapped out. And now the actors have been changed, and we're revising our campaign as we go along.